Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, thank you so much. Hi, everybody. We welcome you back to Close Up Talk Radio. Today, on this broadcast, we're going to do something a little different. As you know, we normally talk to business leaders, business coaches, lots of coaches of all kinds. But today, we're going to talk to a guest who has been with us here on Close Up Talk Radio numerous times before. She has an incredible story to talk about. And basically, she wants to help other women who are in the same boat she finds herself in. And it's pretty amazing. She was on last week talking a little bit about this. We're going to tell this story again for people who did not hear the broadcast last week. I think you're going to find it pretty fascinating. Her name is Heather Rawlings Davis. And as I pointed out, she's previously been featured here on Close Up Radio because she's the founder of Pollywogs and Camp Chocolate. But on this show, she's going to share her personal battle with some complications she's experienced from a Class 3 life-saving medical implant device. Now, according to Heather, the manufacturers, including Johnson & Johnson, Mentor, and Ethicon, do not have any standards of care for women who have these devices. And we're going to get a full explanation from Heather in a couple of minutes about the device and exactly what it is. But anyway, they hand out cards that have to be presented at an airport, for example, that says, I've got such and such a device. But nothing was ever described before surgery or after surgery regarding that card, says Heather. Devices that are not clearly defined apparently become susceptible to greater risk of injuries. And a few years ago, by 2012, for example, there were already indications that these devices may increase the risk of cancer. Still, there were no standards of care or preventative measures to take, nor were there any post-surgical instructions of what Heather's life would be like as a result of having the device. As she points out, Class 3 life-saving medical devices come with lifetime warranties. So Heather called the hotline listed on the back of the card she had, but she got no response. And she learned that the company who sold it to her had been and had the lifetime warranty had been actually purchased by Johnson & Johnson. So she asked Johnson & Johnson for a written copy of the standards of treatment and care for the device, as well as the protocol of treatment. But they couldn't provide that information in writing, and they couldn't give her any standards of care. So when a device with a lifetime warranty does not have any written standards of care, the question really comes down to what can women do? Heather has been turned down everywhere she's gone for help. She's even been refused by numerous attorneys and by the governor of the state, Governor Scott Walker, and Senators Tammy Baldwin and Ron Johnson. She has really gone to bat for this case, and battle is a better way to put it. She points out her children should not have to bear the responsibility of the corporation's inability to respond to the patient and consumer. Her ultimate goal is to shine a light on what's happening to her in the hopes that she can find some resolution and also help other women who might be in the same kind of situation understand, you know, to get some understanding on where they can get help and what can be done. She says this is a bigger woman's health issue that has not been addressed or discussed. And she also points out the United States is home to the best medical treatment in the world, and this is something that simply should not be happening. So that's the premise of what we're going to be talking about. Let's bring her on now. Her name, again, is Heather Rawlings Davis. She's based in Madison, Wisconsin, where it might rain today. I don't know. But anyway, Heather, nice to have you back with us. Good morning. How are you today? Oh, wait, Heather, I got to turn your mic on. Sorry, that's my fault there. There you go. How are you today? Nice to have you here.
Thank you. I'm doing well.
That's
it's a little
good.
Bit rainy today, but I'm doing well.
Well, I hope it doesn't rain too hard. Okay. Let's get into this. Do me a favor. For people who are listening to this now and are kind of wondering what device you're talking about, describe for me the device you are specifically concerned about and obviously that you have. What did you get? What is the device?
I actually had cancer screening in the state of Tucson, Arizona, where I was raising my family, and I had a pre-surgical mammography done that was done by a radiologist. And what they do is they look for all different kinds of cancers, and they basically pre-approve. It's an actual prescription where before the surgery, they pre-approve for surgery. And at that time, they had indicated that I didn't have any cancer present. I had received a Mentor implant. It was a company that is based in the United States. And as is indicated, it is an implant. It's a test implant, but it is also considered a Class 3 medical life-saving device for various reasons. The only other item that is in that category is a pacemaker. That is a legal definition.
So the device, what's the intent of the device? Is it to alert you or your doctors or the medical team if it senses the development of cancer?
There shouldn't be anything that is going to indicate that there's cancer. Basically, on a contract, and I can specifically talk about my contract with the surgery, is one of the important factors is that there was a reduction of cancers, not only with that, but that was very important. And in doing so, I think that was a pretty big factor in receiving it. It was listed as an FDA device. They indicated you got a reduction in cancers. It's pretty much a successful surgery by most standards. And what was kind of getting a little bit scary is that in 2012, just like any detection, they say, you know, call up the manufacturer and ask them what is requested. Like, what is this, not just the standards of care, but you've got to have in any preventative medicine situation, you actually have to have post-test as well. And that's where the consumer hotline, looking at the back of the card, here's your register. They had sent through the mail a letter that stated Johnson & Johnson, now became Johnson & Johnson, Mentor, and Ethicon. They had stated that. But the number on the back of the card was was a Mentor organization. And any time that anyone called, you'd either have to leave a message or a voicemail. Or it was as if the business was, or as the pharmaceutical was closed. And so then it's like, you know, where do you call? So finally, I picked up the phone and I was in touch with someone, and I had kind of a list of questions and regarding, just the composition, the safety, a list of things, and as well as the standards of treatment or what I need to do in order to be also as much as there's compliance as a patient, it's also being a successful patient in that regard. And it was very important. And so I found out that there wasn't standards of care. I was to talk to my primary care physician. I was to basically, you know, follow their instructions as well. So I got in touch with my primary care doctor, and I think one of the most important things that he did immediately is he did take a blood test. It was not a CD30 test, but it was a blood test. And doctors know a lot about that, but I think that was the most very interesting revelation, I think. As a smart physician, because it was going to, I think that was kind of really the lead in how I should be, you know, it's from step one to step two. And then it was to talk to a surgeon and to talk to some other specialists. And,
let me interrupt you for a moment. There's something that I would like to clarify here that might help our audience. This device, I gather, you didn't explain it yet, but I gather you had surgery for cancer. Is that right? Did you have breast surgery?
I had surgery for it wasn't particular cancer. I had surgery, but I was pre-approved by my radiologist. And what the value of that is and what the importance of that is anybody who pre-approves surgery isn't going to put a device in that is going to have a potential of creating or for some reason encouraging some other growth or some other, it's not going to encourage more cancer cell growth. That shouldn't be. And I'm not going to speak for a physician, but as I was told, just knowing about standards of healthcare, when you have a pre-approval by a radiologist, there's no radiologist that would do anything to increase your cancer risk.
Of course, of course. Now, the device itself, make it clear to me what the device's purpose was. You had this device that was put in your body, but what was its main intent? How would you explain it?
Well, the main intent is going to increase the value or quality of your life. As a former athlete, as a former, as a woman in business, as anybody who's ever had, whether it's surgeries or injuries or other things, that was to improve the quality of your life. And, it's necessary to not only just say that, but indicate that for most people in my situation, that's a very healthy way of communicating, or it's a healthy way of looking at, the outlook of any surgery.
And is it a device you asked for? Was it suggested that it would help you?
In what way would it help you? It was approved by many professionals, yes.
Right. I'm still trying to understand exactly what the device does. You say improve your health. How?
The device is it is an implant, and it is to not just improve the quality of your health, but if you have surgery and they go in and speaking from a personal level, and after surgery you have a decrease in cancer risks, that's incredible. But the concerns that are coming out in the media and the concerns that what become fearful instead of addressing the issue, and this is I guess this is about feeling empowered, and that was one of the really important concepts, is without misrepresenting anyone. And one of the really important factors in this is that what turns out is the cancers that they were looking for was talking about the CD30 testing, and the CD30 testing, again, is not, it's a blood cancer. It's a very different cancer than what they were looking for. You know, everybody looks and says, go do your mammographies, go do your other things. Some of the other complications that I've experienced with cysts and other that I've actually had other breast cancer modalities and other surgery people involved in my life in the past between four and six years. I mean, this has been an ongoing thing and an ongoing detection. But one of the things that they've talked about in the media, and it's very loud, it's loud in media, it's NBC, the Lester Holt, is they're talking about another cancer. They're talking about a blood cancer. So they're not talking, they're some of the test taking, mammographies are so important. 3D mammographies are so important for early detection. You can hear people like the Amy Robachs and the Nancy Brinker talking about early detection in the recent media events. But what's important is some of the tests that aren't being done are the ones that test for blood cancers or other types of cancers. And so that's where it's a concern, because some people are missing, they're missing out on some of the screenings that can be done. And
okay,
instead
I understand
of like,
that.
Yeah.
I got that. There are still a couple of questions I'm trying to get a determination on. The device itself, what was it specifically supposed to do? Can you answer that so we understand it? It was put in your body after surgery.
Yeah.
But what was it supposed to do?
The card that they gave us was not, as indicated, it wasn't described that we were going to receive a card. You know, you have surgery, you walk into an airport, you've got a medical device, you've got a better quality of life. The question is what is the medical device card for, other than, indicated that it can be located or it can be produced, or they can say that they can actually recall it or not recall it. There's a question of, you know, this is the identity card of your device, if this is inscribed or not inscribed. And in terms of quality of life, what started happening is that, again, I think it's the really that needs to be addressed is what that contract is reading and what's happening. And when someone can't give you the standards of care, and all the, you know, everybody kind of, as indicated before, I also received an MRI, and anybody with a pacemaker or a Class III medicalized saving device, and there's documents that indicate the FDA, they talk about mitigation, and there are specific documents that I addressed before in 2017 or in 2018, and that's much later than the surgery in 2009. But there's discussions that talk about that MRI and its efficacy. And in that category device, if you talk to most of your surgeons or most of your available physicians that have knowledge of that kind of test in radiology, they'll tell you that it's not an appropriate measure. So what's being stated in guidelines and what's being addressed by the medical associations are not the same. And it's not a compliance concern. I mean, everybody wants to point fingers and talk about compliance when, in fact, as much as people want to talk about compliance, they have to talk about how we're going to go about solving a problem. And one of the things that I think was a relief to people initially was there are these clinics that were going to be established so people with a medical device could walk in and say, I've got a medical device. You know, we need some treatment, or we need to talk about detection, or we need to talk, is it 2 years? Is it every 4 years? What do we need to do as a group of people with a device card that instructs us as a consumer, what is the best solution? Does it need to be replaced? Does it need to be taken out? What gets it put in its place? I mean, there is no description. There's no descriptors for the patient. And I think that in itself, I mean, in terms of a call to action or, and that's what I found out with MD Anderson. I've talked to some other Florida physicians, and they're open and willing to see people as well. And there needs to be some kind of clinic established that can encourage women not only to detection, but taking some of these other tests, the CD30, the blood testing, finding out more about it, creating a body of knowledge where people can get that information or find it that they're going to find a conflict and a resolution. And I think that's really important. And there's not a lot of precedent that has been set legally yet, you know, regarding that, because all the clinics that they refer to, you know, the doctors are like, we don't have a clinic. You know, I mean, I'm not so sure how willing everybody is to speak, because, again, medicine is always a private matter, but in not speaking about it, nothing gets done.
Okay. All right. Let me ask you a couple of other questions here. I understand that, you know, the complications that have cropped up, but have you now experienced a further, you know, growth of cancer in your body that you think you should not have because of the device didn't do its job?
I've had what they started finding numerous cysts. They first started where they found a cyst in one of the cancer surgeon radiology community had removed that. They did CD testing, and after that they found other fluid-like. They had found an aorta cyst. They found some other. So what they're finding is that, like a cyst, like fluid-like, whether they're nodules, but they're fluid-filled is what they are. So I'm still receiving every year. It doesn't go every 2 years, but it is every year that I am very adamant in receiving, you know, a screening like a mammography and other screenings. But one of the really big concerns is that are they, you know, what are they missing? And there is specifically in documentation, I had 100, what had happened was is that I'd walked into a pulmonologist community and the nurse from the University of Wisconsin-Madison had said, we've got a problem here. There's a 100-page HIPAA violation that describes a device on your medical record. And the concern was, is it describing your medical device or is it describing something else? Then they had found documents about a triple mastectomy. I mean, they found all different kinds of activity surrounded that you know, that paper. And that was not generated by a Johnson & Johnson Metronethicon executive, you know, was not generated by anybody that was affiliated or connected to the pharmaceutical. There was, you know, they couldn't identify that. I called Epic Systems. My concern as a businesswoman was, how far does this reach? And they said they really couldn't answer that other than trying to take that 100-page paper off of my record. So it's somewhat of a misrepresentation, not only of the organization, but it's a misrepresentation of me as well.
All right. Now, you say Metro did, I don't know whether they went out of business or what happened, but Johnson & Johnson purchased the rights to this, and they were not able to give you the kind of help you were looking for, right? And you ended up going to the senators and the governor of the states. What have you been pursuing them to do? What kind of action did you want them to take?
Well, I wanted to, first of all, when there is not standards of care, the question is what could they do? And Senator Baldwin's a very big advocate for Women's Health Care Protection Act, as well as the Democrat from Blumenthal. And that was very, as helpful that is, and about empowering women to, it's not about making a difference, but it's, you know, it's trying to receive care and empowering women to feel not just good about themselves, but the necessity for our women and children, you know, to when we raise our families. And initially the concern was, it isn't their inability or not willingness to be of assistance. But the problem is that anybody in the legal community said, oh, it's a personal injury. And personal injury falls in the place of private health care. And it's a very, you know, private health care. And, you know, that's where that was significant. And so the concern that I had was that the paper was considered a congressional review. That's what the paper had indicated. And being on different committees and other things is that I didn't want to be and talking to who my senators are, and is that I didn't want to become politically mapped. I thought that, I mean, that's a pretty big word, but I thought that was, for me, it was inappropriate. And, you know, as being with a partner who's in, who works in the medical field as well as has established himself as a former officer, and all the connected I am to my family and physicians, it wasn't so much inappropriate, but it's hard to try to solve the problem when there's all these things being thrown at you. Like I said, that paper on there was not only a violation of my privacy, but it's really not a good indicator if that's what, you know, if that's the device that's in my body. Nobody verified that. No one validated that document before it was put on my medical record. And that in itself is, there's consequences to that as a consumer as well. And that document I submitted because I was concerned that when you've got all the authors on there that somehow, you know, first of all, your thought is I don't want to be responsible for a congressional review document because I'm not the author. I am a children's author. I am published in Barnes & Noble. I'm very well aware of patents, trademarks, and copyrights, and how frustrating that would be
whether someone's either trying to take credit for something or they're actually trying to, you know, I don't want to call it dump on someone's record, but put that on there because they're looking for a solution. And ultimately, in responsibility, as much as it's solution, you've got to really start trying to figure out how to hire and employ people. And that's people's doctors as well. You want to hire a physician who has the knowledge that can be of assistance. And we live in a, as I indicated or stated in the first show, we live in such a great country where we've got all these resources, and we've been given the ability to utilize the resources by most of our, you know, I talked about the Obama administration, who initially had said, you know, kind of the open resources for studies and research. In education, there's the ERIC databases. I mean, we are, you know, we as a community of people have such a enormity or have the ability to really take care of business, as it were. And I think that's fortunate, but I also think instead of, you know, as they proverbially kind of like throwing some under the bus, it should be like, let's just get down to business and solve problems. I think that...
Let me ask you.
Yeah.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but you've come on to explain this to the audience. How can people, what do you expect people to do? What can people do to help? How can the audience help in this situation? What do you think would be appropriate? What would you like?
Well, I think the important is that as an audience member myself, really, is not just the early detection, but in my case for the card, it was to pick up the phone and make some phone calls. It's not
right.
to feel embarrassed or ashamed or hurt by something that is not, it's not really in that person's control. I mean, most of us like to think that the power of our health is in our own hands, and it's not. And that is not only frustrating, but I think that that's the first step. I think reaching out to other people should not be negative. You know, in that comment, they talk about bearing the responsibility. I myself is a property owner. I own, you know, as much as I own a business, I own a home. I've got property. I've got lakefront property. And one of the biggest interesting awakenings for me was someone said, this device, because it is a Class 3 medical life-saving device, you have legal possession of it. That is the surgical definition. That means once that device is placed in you, the device is legal property of the consumer. It's not the property of the doctor. It's not the property of someone. It's not a spouse. It's about their rights as a consumer, as a patient, to receive care, to get assistance. I mean, essentially even to feel empowered to pick up the phone and if they have to, get the paperwork necessary, you know, for talking to an attorney. And in my case, I even tried to take it to some of the best surgeons. And what started happening was because of all the stuff that was happening on the paperwork, I even had a medical records look like call me on the phone and say, I'm not sending this. And I said, I filled out all the paperwork. That's illegal to do that. You know, I thought, what is happening? You know, as much as they try to protect a physician, what are they doing to protect the patient? And I think there are some things there that have really not only changed my view from my background and my experience or even my personal relationships, but I think that's being a very big patient advocate. But in being a patient advocate for yourself, you're a patient advocate for other people. And it's not only necessary, it's not impossible. And I think whether it's holding someone's hand, it's walking into a care facility to help receive care. I think that, you know, again, picking up the phone. After this time, I can say I'm very happy that Johnson & Johnson, it sounded like finally they had, you know, I think there's, after talking with them, they had given me a medical claim number. So I am with a medical claim number now. That means they have acknowledged that there's complications. They've started to listen. And I think that's what people, and it's not about just wanting to listen. but I think they're wanting to take action. I think they want to be, it's not about being held responsible, but I think it's, and because they bought a device, I think any organization that is globally and is actually
You have been listening to a broadcast
States.
From Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.